This week's episode of Write Minded is brought to you by She Writes University. Unlock your writing career with expert instruction and author-led courses on every subject from marketing your book to social media to querying agents. Put your writing first with She Writes University. Hello, investigators, probers, diggers, scrutinizers, and fact finders. Today's episode celebrates the many writers and authors out there who research the heck out of their books, who bring us the most true version of a story they can find, and who in the process honor or expose cultural traditions and customs, research unknown histories, and unlock previously hidden truths. And I'm here, as always, with my ever-diligent co-host, Grant Faulkner. I'm wondering, Grant, what is the most research you've ever done for a book, and what stands out for you about the act of doing research for fiction?
Yeah, good question. I like to joke that you should always place your novel in Paris or wherever your favorite place is, because then you have to go there to do research, and the trip might even be tax deductible. And, you know, I was thinking about this because I don't think I've ever written a novel that I didn't research in some way. Even novels that I've placed in my hometown or in Berkeley, where I live now, I research in some way. But to answer your question, the most research-heavy novel I've worked on is my novel that takes place in Thailand. And I actually got the idea for it while traveling there, but it wasn't like I was researching the novel. I was just kind of daydreaming about it. So when I came back, in lieu of not having the time or the money to go to Thailand to research, as I would have loved to do, just like Lisa goes to Korea, you know, I read as many books as I could. I read novels about Thailand, which was great to discover Thai authors. I read travel articles. I watched YouTube clips. I watched Thai soap operas on the internet. And I, as much as I wanted to take another trip, at least there are things like Google Maps where I could kind of peek into Thailand and do some research that way. So yeah, so I have two rules of research, though. I feel like you should research just enough so that you don't feel like you have to include everything in your novel. You want to leave some things to your imagination. And then research not just for facts, but for ambiance and character, as well as your story, because your story would be more important than anything else. I love how Lisa teased out that she ate the same food as one of her characters for a certain period of time. I thought that was a marvelous technique. So, Brooke, I know that research plays even more so in the nonfiction realm. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely, Grant. I mean, it depends on the book, but I think a lot of research for nonfiction is less experiential because the work that you're doing is not so much about placing yourself in a time or place or needing to metabolize that in the way that you might for fiction. And you're so right. I mean, the listeners are in for a treat to hear Lisa C's process, because I think she's probably one of the most diligent researchers of all times. But I'm thinking about books where that can be the case, like true crime books, for instance. I'm remembering Truman Capote's In Cold Blood, and I can only imagine the amount of research that goes into those kinds of books. Nonfiction research does typically involve a lot of reading and oftentimes a lot of interviews. My book that has just come out, Write On Sisters, is really the first book I've ever written that has real research. The first two books I wrote were more based on my expertise, and so I gained a whole new level of appreciation for what writers who write extensively researched books really go through. And mostly, it occurred to me that there's no real outer limit to what you can do when you immerse yourself in research. And Lisa does speak to that, you know, this notion of over-researching. And I'd done research projects before in high school and college, including my master's thesis. But there's so much more at stake with books. And so what came up for me as I was doing that was twofold. You know, one was that I just scratched the surface of what was available, and I sort of felt the pang of that. And then second was that it was hard to just allow it to be done. Because even after my book went to layout, even as the book was going to the printer, I kept coming across things in my reading that would lead to questions like, you know, should this have gone in my book, or this would have been interesting in my book? And I imagine I'm not alone in that. And then plus, when you write a research book, you're saying to your readers that you're an authority, that you've done the work, and then you're standing on the shoulders of the giants who have come before you and done research on these topics or written books on these topics. So there's just a lot at stake, and it really matters that you do it well.
Yeah, it sounds like you do it well. I think that danger of under-researching, it's really easy to be seduced by that, kind of without knowing it these days. And I think because of the internet, people will look up something and they'll just trust what they find and then they'll plug it into their book. And I've found I've done that and I've been wrong. I've had something, that I'm embarrassed by. So always make sure you fact check things. And the question of research is interesting to me at the moment because I'm putting together a nonfiction book proposal that relies on a lot of research. In short, I'm writing a book on rejection and I'm profiling how different authors have dealt with rejection. And some authors that will be in the book are living authors, so I'm going to try to interview them. And in fact, I won't include living authors unless I can interview them. So J.K. Rowling, if you're listening, as I think you might be, please give me an hour or so of your time to include you in your book. And I'm also including stories of dead authors, which will be more challenging in some ways. So for authors like Madeline Lengel, I hope to talk with her descendants to fill in the blanks and go beyond what biographies about her, tell about her story. But yeah, it's going to be, that's why I'm so inspired by Lisa. It's going to be interesting for me to get these first person accounts. And I hope this will make the book more interesting to readers because I'll uncover new information that's actually not on the internet. So yeah, no trips to Paris planned yet, but if J.K. Rowling comes through, I'll definitely go to London to interview her in a cafe.
I bet you will, and I might be coming along with you. But yeah, so Lisa, as we've been talking about, she writes historical novels about China, primarily through her most recent novel, The Island of Sea Women. And that one's about these women sea divers on the remote Korean island of Jeju. And she's taken many trips to Asia to research her novels. And I know a lot of authors who do this kind of on-the-ground research. And many genres lend themselves to research trips, actually, novels, of course, and memoirs and nonfiction books. If you want to see a place for yourself, if you want to interview people who've lived through that time that you're writing, people who survived something that's central to your book, or in the case of Lisa C, these women divers that she interviewed are living, breathing witnesses to a way of life that may soon be extinct. And I personally love reading novels with backdrops against big historical moments because you get to learn, and it's in such an enjoyable way. Through story and through emotional connection. But with that, of course, comes this huge responsibility on the writer because, in many cases, these writers are introducing their readers to something that the reader has never considered before, they've never heard about, they never learned about in school. And all the writers I know who write this kind of fiction do feel a big responsibility to get it right, as they should.
Yeah, and it's interesting when you bring up the idea of witnessing something and being as close as you can to the people you're interviewing. I was thinking when I was joking about the interviews that I'm going to do for my book, there's so many choices for research. You can interview by email, you can interview by phone, but I really do think there is something about the closer you can get to a person, whether it's voice or in person, you're just going to get better material, and I think that comes through when, in our discussion with Lisa. And when you mentioned historical novels, it made me think about Anthony Doerr's popular novel, All the Light We Cannot See, which I recently read. And it takes place during World War II. And I was just amazed by the way he captured history in such detail. It was one of those moments where I was like, if I wrote this novel, I don't think I could do that. I truly felt that I'd been transported in time and place when I was reading it. And that was actually one of the best, most enjoyable things about reading that book. One of the characters is actually even a boy who builds radios, and Doerr just captured all the details of radio technology at the time. It was like he was a specialist in the field or something. It was interesting. So I Googled him and his research process after reading that. And to know the details of his characters, he wanted to know like the objects that they might have on their nightstand. That's the kind of detail that he got into. And so he actually researched Sears catalogs of the period to find those little details. And it's the accretion of such details that makes the novel seem so intricate and on some level magical. Brooke, what well-researched book comes to mind that you've loved?
Yeah, there are so many. And when I was thinking about this question, when we were prepping, two books immediately came to mind that made this huge impact on me. And when I went and looked them up, I realized that they're a husband and wife. And that was kind of funny. So the first one I read about 15 years ago, and the other just 2 summers ago. So the 15 years ago book was King Leopold's Ghost. And I've never forgotten that book. Adam Hochschild did such an amazing amazing job of piecing together the history of one of the worst crimes of the 19th century, which was Belgium's figurative and literal rape of the Congo under the rule of King Leopold II. And it's a story of exploitation and greed and outright criminality. It's a tough but important read. And it's one of those stories that you read that immediately makes you think of the many examples of a Western nation coming uninvited and unwelcome and pillaging a country and then ruining the lives of the native peoples. And so it has, honestly, I think about it often, you know, all these many years later. And then the other book, Strangers in Their Own Land, like I said, just happens to be written by Adam Hochschild's wife, Arlie Russell Hochschild. And clearly this husband and wife duo is rubbing off on each other in a really good way. And Strangers in Their Own Land shed light for me on what the heck is going on in our country right now. So it's not historical. It's very of the now. And yet it's also incredibly well researched. And Arlie had to spend quite a lot of time in the South and did a ton of interviewing. And she wrote about how and why red voters feel so disaffected, even as they are being exploited by corporate America. And so it's one of the more disturbing books I've read in recent years for its revelation about how people participate in and advocate for their own downfall, in a sense. And yet it was also really enlightening because Arlie was able to get into the minds of these people that she lived with and interviewed to show how different populations in our country are feeling like they're being cut in front of, you know, that other people are cutting in line and how they're falling behind. And it's been helpful to me, which I think is another thing that books should do, to help you see a different perspective and to feel some compassion in moments that I might otherwise feel angry. And what's clear is that research often goes hand in hand with writing a book, right? It's also the case that it takes a certain aptitude and curiosity. So you have to be in love with your subject matter to want to immerse yourself so fully into something in that way. And I see this with writers I know who are into, you know, maybe even obsessed with their subjects, and they become experts and they actually fall in love with their subject matters. And even when those subjects, people, for instance, are bad actors, there's still often a deep desire to understand those people's motivations, to understand their worlds and what motivates them and their influences, all of which lead us, the readers, to understand something in a way that we undoubtedly wouldn't have otherwise. And isn't that why we read in the first place, right? To gain a different or new understanding, to put ourselves in someone else's shoes, or to travel to a different time or place and get some experiential insight into something we never knew existed. And so it's pretty exciting stuff.
Thanks so much, Brooke. And one last research tip, always be sure to take breaks when you're researching. And we're in fact going to take a break right now, and we'll be back in just a moment. Brooke, I think we agree that one of the great benefits of writing is the way it expands our world. It's constant learning opportunity, and that can mean everything from how to write suspenseful plots or riveting characters to doing research for an historical novel or studying philosophy to get some insights into the human character, as we will talk about today with our guest, Lisa C. And that's why I'm especially happy that Great Courses is sponsoring Right Minded. You literally have thousands of different courses at your fingertips. So, for example, if you're writing a novel about witches, you might want to listen in on Mystics, Heretics, and Witches in the Western Tradition, which I want to take even though I'm not writing a novel about witches, at least not yet. I know you've been listening to the Great Courses Plus app on your phone, Brooke. So what have you enjoyed?
I've been loving it. I've been watching it on the phone and then sometimes just listening while I drive, even if I can't watch the lecture itself. And I've been devouring James Scott Bell's course, How to Write Best-Selling Fiction. And of course, James was a guest on our podcast not so long ago. I'm not writing a novel, Grant, but I do coach novelists from time to time. And so I'm just picking up some great ideas, and it's so comprehensive. There are 25, 30-minute lectures, and he's such an enthusiast. Fantastic teacher.
Absolutely. I loved his episode with us, and I've loved listening to his courses as well. And it's just a great refresher on writing. And I always learn something new from James. And actually, I want to say it's the perfect course to get ready to write a novel in November. It's as if James was teaching a nano prep course.
I so agree. And all the more reason that our listeners should sign up for the Great Courses Plus, because they are our official sponsor for the time being. And we want you guys to enjoy it the way that we've been enjoying it. You can get an entire month for free. And we ask you to sign up through our dedicated URL, which is thegreatcoursesplus.com/rightminded.
You know what, Brooke? I'm going to repeat that so that everyone gets it. It's 1 month free, right?
Yes.
It's thegreatcoursesplus.com/rightminded. No hyphen in that right minded.
No hyphen. Just do it.
Let's learn.
Hello, everybody. We are back with today's guest, Lisa Sea. And Lisa's new novel, The Island of the Sea Women, is about the free diving women of South Korea's Jeju Island. And Booklist has called this book stupendous, enthralling, and engrossing. And Jodi Picoult said that Lisa Sea excels at mining the intersection of family, friendship, and history. And in this newest novel, she reaches new depths, exploring the matrifocal Hanyu society in Korea, caught between tradition and modernization. Sea is the New York Times bestselling author of The Tea Girl, of Hummingbird Lane, Snowflower and the Secret Fan, Peony in Love, Shanghai Girls, China Dolls, and Dreams of Joy, which debuted at number one. And you can find out more about Lisa at lisac.com. Lisa, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So we're starting with this question about research trips in particular. You took a trip to a remote area of China for Snowflower and the Secret Fan, where you were told that you were the second foreigner to ever visit. And then you took a trip in 2014 to China to research The Tea Girl of Hummingbird Lane. And then for your most recent book, The Island of Sea Women, you traveled to the island of Jeju. And so I'm wondering about authors who take these kinds of intense research trips for their books. And I'd like to hear about your trips and how important they are to the novels that you write.
Well, first of all, research is my favorite part of the writing process. I absolutely love it. I totally over-research because I love it. And the reason is I never know what I'm going to find. To me, it's like a big treasure hunt. And so that while I'm doing the research, I will find something. I'll think, oh, I've got to use that. And so, for example, with the Island of Sea Women, these diving women, one of the most dangerous things for them to harvest is abalone. And it's still, to this day, the number one cause of death for these divers. And I won't go into the details of how that happens, but when I read about how that happens, I thought, oh, I have got to use that. And so then it becomes a matter of where does it go in the story? Is it the beginning, in the middle, at the end? You know, how am I going to use it? But I wouldn't have necessarily thought that up just by myself, that, oh, yes, this is the thing that's very dangerous for those women. And so when you go on a research trip, that's taking that kind of treasure hunt to a different level, because what I'm looking for is an experience of all of five senses. What does it look like? What does it smell like? What does the air feel like? You know, on Jeju Island, it's known for what are called the three abundances: women, wind, and stones. And it's a very, very windy place. And so how does that feel in the morning? How does it feel on your skin in the evening? How does it feel in a storm? And the only way you're going to experience that is if you go. And the same with, you know, what do people eat? So I try to eat everything that my characters eat. And I did that for every book except for Dreams of Joy.
That's really interesting, Lisa. And I'm curious about the balance between primary sources and other kinds of research you do. And recently, I read that you were lauded by the New York Times for the primary source research you did for your new book. And I was thinking that in some cases, there will be primary sources available and in other cases, not. So how important is it to you to go to the physical location of where your novels are set?
Well, it's huge. And in the case of the Island of Sea Women, I was able to interview women who are divers. And so it's one thing to read about them in an article or in someone's dissertation or, you know, there's been a lot of scientific research on these women because of their ability to withstand cold and how they could hold their breath for so long. But it's very different sitting down in someone's house. You're, you know, in Korea, so you're sitting on the floor and you're drinking tea and you're eating oranges and you're just chatting, and you can see how people actually live. But if you interview someone for 2 to 8 hours, you're going to learn things that you will never find in someone else's dissertation. So that, to me, is incredibly important. And there's parts of those stories that will make it into books, you know, that I might use for one character or another. Another thing is, you know, some of the interviews are set up long in advance, and then others, I leave plenty of time just for happenstance. You know, these women, there's a whole category of them who are semi-retired, and they're, you know, in their late 80s, early 90s, and they sit on the beach and they sort and collect the algae and seaweed that's washed ashore overnight. And so I would walk from woman to woman and just say, hey, can I talk to you for a few minutes? And sometimes they were like, yeah, sure. And sometimes they're like, no, I'm busy, go away. And, you know, when you're just talking to people, they will do things like sometimes they're bragging or sometimes they're complaining or sometimes they want to talk about diving off the shore of Vladivostok in the middle of winter in the 1930s. I mean, you don't know what stories they're going to tell.
Your level of research and the depth you go is like really inspiring. And one thing that I love is how you've also made your research available on your own website. There's a ton of information about the books you've written, complete with articles and video links. And you even have a menu tab called Research. And these all lead to sites that are dedicated to the books you've written, complete with historical links for the books. Can you tell us about your decision to do this for your readers and about your own desire to process of gathering materials about your books that are in fact beyond a given book?
So that kind of grew organically in some ways. And it was really a combination of things. So I do still have, it's the same website, one of the first author websites. And that's because my son did it as a project in high school, like a million years ago. So, you know, from the beginning, I thought it was it was interesting to put background material up there. I mean, this was really early in author websites, you know, again, so there wasn't a formula to them. So I was just thinking about what would be interesting to people. And then I was contacted by a professor at a university down here in Los Angeles. That he had an assignment for his class where they had to pick a book and do a website about it. And it would have things like a location in the book, at the time that it took place, and what it looks like today. So this was for Shanghai Girls. And these four young women, who are all nursing students of all things, they put together the most incredible website that was just dedicated to Shanghai Girls. And I loved it. And so I asked them if they would do it for another book and then another book. And then pretty soon we were just, you know, I had somebody who was working for me and just doing it herself. With Snowflower and the Secret Fan, I had so much email from readers who would say, you know, I was reading your book and then I really had to know more about Bound Feet and foot binding in general. And what's the history of it? And what did it look like? And so it seemed logical to me that if people were going to do a search for something that was in my book, I should be providing it. That I could be like one-stop shopping. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It is profound. I mean, I spent quite a bit of time looking and felt like each one of those was a treasure trove. So thank you for the time that you've put into that. And I read Snowflower and the Secret Fan when it first came out. I remember what a big deal that book was. And one of the interviews that you have on your website is between you and your mother. And it's such a touching interview. And she asked you in that interview about when you first realized that Snowflower was, in her words, a different kettle of fish, and that you were on to something really big. So I'm wondering, why do you think that book was such a big deal? And do you have a sense that you're hitting on something as or equally important and memorable with The Island of Sea Women?
So when I started working on Snowflower and the Secret Fan, I was what they call a critically acclaimed author, which meant I got really great reviews and nobody read my books. And, you know, my publisher did say, yes, go ahead and go do this. But as I started doing the research, everyone said to me, no one's going to read this book. I mean, my agent said it. My editor said it. Other writer friends would say, oh, yeah, it's interesting that you're doing that. But, you know, no one's going to read it. And everybody had a reason. Oh, it takes place in China. It takes place in the past. It's about women. Oh, and the other thing was people would say, and, you know, everyone's going to think you're a lesbian. I was like, whoa, that, you know, okay. I mean, it's so weird how people responded in advance. And so in my mind, I thought, well, okay, no one's going to read this, so that's fine. I'll just write the book that I want. And if I'm lucky, and I even had a number in my mind, the right 5,000 people will find it. So I had very low expectations, and so did everyone else. And then it took off. But I would say that it didn't get onto the New York Times bestseller list for 18 months. So it was a very slow build, and it truly was word of mouth. It was one of those examples of word of mouth. You know, I was lucky that it was my fifth book, but it wasn't my first. And that I had already kind of an established career, and actually I was already an established person in myself. And so I didn't have to worry so much about what the next book would be or if it would be as good. You know, I didn't have a sophomore book following that as my first book. And that I had really learned something in the process of writing it, that whole sense of, well, no one's going to read this, so I might as well write exactly what I want, and that hopefully the right audience will find it. And that's something that I've really continued to do to today, is people will say, like, what do you want your audience to get out of this? And I know it's rude to readers, but I'm not thinking about them. I'm really only thinking about, what is the story I want to tell? And how deep can I go in telling it? And hopefully somebody will read it. That the right people will find it and the right people will like it.
I love that, Lisa. And Brooke shared with me that you've put together some of your top tips for writing and publishing. And I can only imagine the wealth of knowledge you've gathered over the years. So I was wondering, in closing, what is just one tip you might offer to fans and or aspiring authors?
I have to pick one. Okay, I'm going to do three really quickly. One, write 1,000 words a day. That's just 4 pages. If you can't do 1,000 words, do 500. Number two, be passionate about what you're writing. This is not laying asphalt. You know, we say sometimes it's hard work, but it's not hard work like laying asphalt. But there are bumps along the way. So you have to be passionate about what you're writing. I look at this, each project, not like it's a one-night stand, but like it's a marriage for life. And yes, there are going to be ups and downs, but I'm going to love it forever, hopefully. And then the last thing, so I've been very much inspired by the women writers in China in the mid-17th century in the Yangtze Delta. I wrote about them in Tianyinma. And there were more women writers who were being published at that time in China than all together in the rest of the world. Over 1,000, so really a lot of women who were being published in this 30-year span. And so they had this belief, which was, you have to cut to the bone to write. And I really believe that you have to, you have to go deep inside yourself to think about relationships, to think about emotions, to think about cause and effect, and what the lasting impact of something can be, whether it's a betrayal or revelation of a secret, or, you know, and all those things that happen in our lives that may not necessarily be wonderful. And so that's, you know, be inspired by the 17th century women writers.
Love that.
Yeah, great, great moment to end on. Thank you so much, Lisa, and we appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be right back with this week's takeaway.
This week's class on She Writes University features Lisa C., and she's teaching an online class about bringing hidden stories to light. In this class, Lisa uses her 2 decades in writing and publishing to bring you 20 tips for uncovering the story you're meant to write. Check out Lisa's course and 7 other author-led classes at She Writes University, which is brought to you by Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books, a podcast that you can download on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, everybody, I am back with your weekly writing action, which is prepping yourself to be a good researcher. So are you writing a book that entails research? If so, figure out what you need to know. Will you be interviewing people? Question number one. Limiting your research to what's online? Do you need to take a trip to another part of the country or out of the country? And so it's great to make a list of what you think you need to do for your research. Things, subjects that you want to know more about, people you might want to interview, authors whose works you need to read. And you do need to pace yourself. As Grant said earlier, it's important to take breaks, and you do want to find ways to stoke the inspiration as well. And so it might be a balance of writing and research. There's really nothing more daunting than the abyss that research can become. And that's whether you're working on fiction or nonfiction. And good research just involves tons of sorting and reading. And so if you're in the position to do so, you might consider hiring a research assistant to support you. If you can afford it, take the trips you need to take, because what gets uncovered when you're in the actual place, as Lisa C. was sharing with us, is nothing short of profound for how it will inform your work. In her case, you heard her say she hired a translator, so that might need to happen. There's really no substitute for being where you need to be in person. That said, if you can't, Google Earth is incredible, and there are so many resources for researchers these days, whether it's documentaries, interviews, newspaper and magazine archives, or just good old-fashioned books. And some of you might want to take the opportunity to go to the Library of Congress. I highly recommend it. I actually spent 1 semester in college as an assistant to a fellow at the Woodrow Wilson Institute, where my entire job was obtaining books for him from the Library of Congress and annotating certain chapters that pertain to his subject and then transcribing his interviews. And it was a fascinating job. And it showed me over the course of that single semester that far more research is generated by diligent authors than can ever fit into a single book. And I have to say, that's part of doing it the right way. So get out there, make a plan, and good luck.
Thanks, Brooke. And if you're traveling to go research your novel, remember you can download Right Minded on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And we're a weekly podcast. And please help us out by rating us or giving us a review. It helps other people find us. And we want to keep the discussion of writing expanding. So we'll see you next week.